with episode 805 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host. Next time we have...
Oh, this is Gary from Jacksonville, and boy, has a lot been going on this week, and it's not even on the TV yet, so it's quite interesting.
Yeah. big time moves, let's put it that way. And, we are going to be going into, it's going to be a variety here. We're going to be talking about some movie stuff. We're going to be talking about some books, I'm sure. We're also going to be talking about some of the news coming out regarding renewals and cancellations and so forth as we go into what, for us, as we record this, is on the eve of the typical network upfront week, which we'll probably talk a little bit about how kind of useless that is now. But anyway. And then, we've got a week's worth of episodic discussion to get into before we're done for this particular stretch. But before we do any of that discussion about movies and such, Gary, maybe a disclaimer?
Yes, absolutely. During the course of our show, we are very excited about not only the news we report, but the shows we watch. And during the course of that, we will... not inadvertently, but directly, spoil any surprise endings, births, deaths, and other twists of the storylines. So if you're not caught up, and we hope you are, then you might want to pause this for a few minutes, or just trudge ahead and listen to all the amazing things that have been happening on both the big, small, and computer screens.
Absolutely. All right, well, that having all been said and done, Gary, how's your week been?
Oh, it's been a little hectic. I did something called tubing yesterday, where we went down a natural spring river with my Boy Scout troop, and that was a lot of fun. On the book front, I did finish Tarkin, and I am now currently in Thrawn territory. Uh-huh. So it's quite. I'm definitely feel I haven't remembered the last time that I've mainlined now my fifth Star Trek book in a row, Star Wars book in a row, and so it's I feel quite immersed in the Empire at the moment, so we'll have to see how it comes out. I'm enjoying the Thrawn book. My only complaint so far is I think they work a little too hard to make him seem clever. I think he could come across on his own, but they're sort of like, hey, see, look how clever he is. He figured this out. Hey, look how clever he is. He's figured the secret. Okay, I get the idea. He's smart, and it's not saying I don't want the mysteries revealed, but it's... the setup for almost each revelation so far is very similar to the next one. So I'm a little disappointed in the variety, but he's definitely giving him a good grounding in the character. And so far, I wish he had been a little bit more diverse, though. He's not just being two steps ahead of every problem guy. That doesn't have to be the only thing his character is, and it feels like it. Right now, so I'm only about 200 pages in, and I think I have another few hundred to go, so I'm hoping they can spice it up a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, I think that they do over time, but I think also they're constrained by the fact that they had to shoehorn him in somewhat to the Rebels universe, and by the way that he was portrayed in there, he is a little bit more limited in scope than what we remember from the novels from the, you know, old EU. So I think that there is a little bit of a compare contrast that we cannot avoid because of the fact that we did remember the original character, and he was so iconic as to essentially reignite the entire franchise in some respects back in the 90s. So
he definitely at least spurred the EU universe to really expand out. And did I have too high expectations when I heard Zahn was writing again? I was thinking that we'd take the character we knew and keep going as opposed to start from scratch, I guess, which is what this is. So maybe that's what I'm not enjoying as much about this. There's a lot more introduction where I just want to get to the meat.
Yeah, that might be it. That, again, because they are kind of rebooting the character for the new canon. It's the pros and cons, right? I mean, the pro is he's there. The con is he's not established the way that he was in when he was leading the Imperial Remnant and all that kind of stuff. But that having been said, because I finished the book. So I was quite pleased with it. Largely because, at least in my opinion, it is probably the best of the new canon novels that I've read so far. I can't say that I'm particularly impressed by too many of the new canon novels, which probably is part of the problem, but Tarkin was perfectly fine for me. I just, to be honest with you, after I read it, I couldn't tell you what happened in it. So, but then
he had a cool ship.
I'm a bit far removed from it now. So yes. Maybe if it was something that was relatively, you know, recent for me, that would be one thing. But yeah, right now, I couldn't tell you that, where I feel like this is a little bit more what I'm expecting. Even if it's...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, yeah, no, I agree. I think the Thrawn book, reading them back-to-back like this, it is a better written book. So yeah. I do.
I'm just trying to think of what other novels that I've read that would really are, because there were a couple that just aren't very good, at least in my opinion, but there haven't been that many books for us to compare, so that's part of the problem. I did pick up Catalyst, though, because it just came out in paperback, and that is the prequel to Rogue One, you know, the prequel to...
The prequel to the prequel, yes, yeah.
Yes, so it's one step further back, but yeah, I'm looking forward to that one, too, and I do still have Life Debt sitting on my shelf somewhere to read eventually. But yeah, I've since moved on from that book, just to kind of piggyback on what you were saying for reading material, and I'm right now reading a Star Trek book, which is, I put them aside for several months just because I was a little burnout on them, and it really felt like they weren't particularly going anywhere. But this one is interesting. I believe, I don't have it right in front of me, but it's called Force and Motion. It's a Deep Space Nine novel, and what's interesting about it is that they actually take the character of Captain Maxwell, which was O'Brien's former CO back in the day, the one who was very anti-Cardassian and so forth.
Yes.
And they pretty much tell the story, not necessarily from his point of view, but it's very much kind of what happened to him and how it relates to the, you know, later in his life type of scenario. Now, you know, it does kind of incrementally move forward the Deep Space Nine timeline, but more in terms of just a handful of characters. About, I would say, 100 pages into it, and right now the only familiar characters other than Maxwell that show up are O'Brien and Nog. So it's a pretty, in that sense, intimate story. It's very much just about, you know, what's going on there and some of the philosophical, psychological type of issues that come up, but it's a pretty good read so far. It was nice to kind of get a step back, I think, and then move back into it. It means that I'm a bit far behind on the Star Trek novels, but just like comic books, sometimes it's one of those things where I really feel the need to just take a step back for a while because it's getting a little bit too bland or familiar, and I'd rather have a little bit of distance in order to make it fresh again.
When is it set? Is it post T? Is it, well? I just mean, is it post series or is
it set
in the series?
Okay. Continuing the storyline. Again, it's kind of set where those novels are roughly now. It's just a little bit of a side story. So it's after, you know, the whole, you know, election deal and all that kind of stuff is going on. So it's definitely way down the line. But it's also, like I said, just it's probably 5 days after the previous novel, but it's not carrying forward like a ton of plot threads or anything. It's very much a story in that time frame, but it's not like a mainline thing. If you really kind of said, okay, what's the next one that advances the plot threads, the major plot threads post series, that's probably would be, you know, a different novel than the one that I'm reading. It's just set in the same time period. I think I want to say like 2483 or something like that.
I'm not holding you to a star date. I was just curious if it was a post TV series.
Well after the TV series. It's like, you know, whatever the next one in the sequence would be, that's the novel that it is. It's just...
Okay, no problem.
Similar novel.
I thought
it's
it might be...
kind of self-contained, you know, in that regard, but...
You never know. Every once in a while, they'll throw in a few, like a big crossover thing, and sometimes it's set before, so I wasn't sure.
Let's see, beyond that, basically trying to keep up with all the TV shows right now, because it is May, we're getting down to the nitty gritty with a lot of shows, and, trying to get them, all in order to be ready for the season finales and stuff, because that's really the big thing, is the big spoilers that come out of
yeah, I know,
season finales run, and it's like, crap, okay, there's quite a lot of them all coming at once.
Oh, I know, and I'm jealous of your viewing schedule. Just for our listeners who don't know, even though we have other reviewers such as Edmund, myself, and sometimes Henry, Nadim, and other people from the VOG network, John typically watches 90 to 95% of every show that we talk about on this, and I partially admire him and am envious of that amount of time that he has to devote to this. I certainly don't, and I'm appreciative that he does review all these shows every week, because so he is, he is definitely the Iron Man as far as it comes to catching up on shows every week. So I am grateful, and I'm more than glad to quiz you occasionally to find out what's going on shows of quasi interest to myself, but ones I honestly cannot devote the time to. So kudos to you without dragging it too long. But you're right. There are, I think we had 23 shows this week that were actually on our slate. I admit I watched probably about 7 or 8. John watched 22. So that's just what I'm talking about. But anyway, I didn't want to toot you. I didn't want to toot your horn too hard. But it is, as you said, it's a plethora of shows that I just want to emphasize when you're saying it's a big slate. It is. It really is.
It picked up quite a bit again. And unfortunately, that's just the way that it goes sometimes. But that's as good a lead-in as any, is the fact that if it wasn't for the fact that we kind of started re-engineering and re-emphasizing things here on the show in the middle of a year, right, from a broadcast perspective, I think that it would have gone differently, because a lot of that is trying to just be fair to everybody, where, if a show started in the fall and is going to end in the spring, I don't want to just drop that, right? Plus, we've gone June to June before, as far as our kind of traditional, I'm putting this in air quotes, traditional, rather, 12-month cycle, right? But last year, we acknowledged it, and earlier this year, when we started making some major changes, we acknowledged it. The way that we had formatted the podcast and formatted our show before was really based very heavily upon the notion of a traditional TV season and things kind of letting up at certain times of the year. It used to be that, you started off strong in the fall, you got your slate of new shows, things very quickly kind of panned out which ones were successful and which ones were not, and then by, the end of November, your first sweeps period, everything dropped off the schedule. And then you maybe had a couple specials here and there, and then January it would pick back up again into, March. April would be pretty sparse, or rather through February, then March would be sparse, then April and May would be when you cleaned up your season and you went home. And then they started with all these mid-season things, 13 episodes here, 6 episodes there, 8 over here, and everybody and their brother started doing a lot more programming over the summer as well, which just meant that you never really had a break. Per se, it just became relentless, and not only that, but you also had the just proliferation, if you will, of all the cable networks also wanting to get in on the genre bandwagon. And just in the last 2 years, it has changed dramatically. It used to be a lot easier to keep up with some of these things, but even I get to the point where I'm just like, okay, enough. We've got way too much on the list. I think by the time that we get to the end of the year and we talk about it a little bit, we're going to have the most shows that we have ever had and that we've covered. And it's no big surprise that there's a bit of burnout taking place, which we mentioned very, openly before. Long introduction into saying that a lot of my viewing has been largely to just round out the year. If I started watching something, I don't want to drop it. If it was, a follow-up season, I was more likely to go ahead and continue with it. There are a lot of shows that are now ending that won't be coming back. There are a lot of shows that the season is over now. I'll be honest, I'm probably going to reevaluate a lot of that. For the same reasons that Gary and Edmund and others have done so. It's just too much now. We went from famine a few years ago to just absolute endless buffet, all you can eat. And just like with any of these huge mega buffets that you go to, you're not going to be able to sample everything. It's just impossible. So we're going to pick our favorites as we've kind of, been slowly but surely moving this way. Part of those changes, too, is that, traditionally, and this is what brought it to mind. It's been kind of something that's been in the back of my head for maybe a month now, right? Where we've got shows like Sense8 that came back. We've got shows like The Handmaid's Tale. We've got shows like Iron Fist. all these streaming shows where several episodes go out at once. Sci-Fi is dumping an entire season of 12 Monkeys on us in just a couple weeks. It becomes almost ridiculous to stretch those out. It really does. Because more and more often, we were doing it because it made sense from our perspective before, but now the more and more these shows come out, the more it is very clear that they are designed to be watched in a binge-watching type of...
They're written in that style, yeah, yes.
Exactly. Plus, the fact is that why stretch out something like Iron Fist? There's really no need.
Saying take the hit all at once?
Yeah, well, that's part of that. But remember, I think that, you know, Edmund and even Bronstam at the time, the first season of Daredevil comes out, and it was very clear that it was still written episodically.
Yes.
There are certain elements of that to the Marvel Netflix shows still, but more and more I get the feeling that they're meant to be seen as a larger piece. With so much out there, it's hard to sustain interest in something that everybody binge-watched, and now they've moved on to the next thing. I can't imagine anybody wanting to hear us talk about Sense8 3 months from now. Would be a time to talk about it, at least, you know, when we get the chance to watch it. So, I mean, you've got all this stuff that's coming out. You've got big shows that are dropping. You know, like, I would love to be able to watch, you know, sometime in the May-June timeframe, the third season of 12 Monkeys, and I don't know that stretching it out is going to do anybody any good. Defenders comes out in August. I'm probably going to want to watch that in one or two sittings, if possible, because it is a big event, right? Sense8 maybe is a slower burn for me, but for others, they may want to talk about the whole thing. Who knows? I guess what I'm getting at is that after this, you know, May-June timeframe, probably sooner rather than later, we probably won't do things the way that we've done it in the past. I don't know that we're going to have weekly scores the way that we used to do them. I'm almost certain that we're not going to have the season-long tracking of, you know, scores to be able to compare shows and so forth like we have before. Because before it was maybe 20, 30 shows in a year. Now it's like 80. It's just not possible. It's not practical. I don't think anyone's getting anything out of it anymore. Certainly, you know, we used to be able to do a rundown of an entire year's of worth of shows in one or two sittings. We'd literally need to devote the entire month of June to this. I don't see that it's value added. I think that we can round out what we're doing with, you know, the top and the bottom and so on, and then really focus going forward from there on the shows that excited us in that given week. And I know there's going to be a lot of overlap. We'll probably still have a list. We'll probably still ourselves internally kind of go down the list and maybe focus on certain shows that are of common interest. But if there's a show that I'm the only one who's been watching it, chances are I'm thinking of dropping it, half of them, because I just don't have time. Or I'd rather focus on a show that we can all talk about. And that's something that we talked about way back at the beginning of this particular year, back in January, February. It makes it a lot easier for people like Edmund or other guests eventually, perhaps, to come on and talk about something without a whole ton of preparation. I just think it makes us more flexible. It also makes it a lot more interesting to hear us talk about things, because it'll be things that we really want to be watching and that we're excited about. So it's been going on a little bit more and more in the background, where we focus on shows like, say, The Expanse, or, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been really good, so we've been talking about that a lot lately. We've been talking about our frustrations with this series of Doctor Who, for instance, and things of that nature. So more and more often, I think it's clear that we have been gravitating towards certain shows and then letting the others kind of be more in the background. It's just going to continue to be that way. And it's for our own sanity more than it is anything else. We've got to be able to feel engaged in what we're doing. And I think that, Gary, you know, when we first talked about this, everybody was really feeling like, yeah, we always worry that it would start to feel like work. And to try and keep up with this many shows feels a lot like work. So it necessarily has to change in order for us to feel engaged in what we're talking about. So not really anything new, but just, yeah, as we round out these seasons and such, don't be surprised if it pares down. There's just no need for us to try to capture every little thing that's going out. And that said, there is a lot of good stuff out there that's worth focusing on.
Oh, yeah. Jeez.
So, yeah. You know, why spend 5 hours trying to cover five different shows when there's one that is really engaging you? You know, put the time and effort into that. So... I didn't mean to get on a soapbox there, but yeah, since you kind of brought up the plethora of shows, it's like, oh yeah, I might as well mention that. It's probably not going to happen for much longer. Yeah, and I mean, it's just the natural evolution of things, I think. You know, over 800 episodes, things change, guys. Things change. If you go back to our first few episodes and listen to that versus now, it clearly things have changed. And actually back then, I don't know, Gary, if you've ever gone really back to the beginning. I don't even know if I still have some of those shows, but back in the beginning, I mean, we really didn't have a list.
No, we just talk about what we saw.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really starting to get back almost to our roots, which is, I find pretty cool and exciting myself. Yeah, so we did say that we were going to talk about either the current cancellations and so forth or Guardians of the Galaxy. Let's go ahead and talk right now about Guardians of the Galaxy, maybe, and switch gears quite a bit. Gary, you've seen the second film in that particular series. What did you think of it?
I am Groot.
You're Groot?
No. You're Groot. I talked about this a little bit, and I guess we can go. I can go into more detail now that you have seen it. I thought it was good. I don't know if it was because we were revisiting or because the script wasn't quite what the first one was, but it felt a little less. I can't say I enjoyed it quite as much. Maybe it's just because I'm used to the characters now instead of discovering them. I thought the storyline was decent. The use of Groot was, I loved it very much, but I've heard people say it was over the top, and I can't disagree with them. That it, the cuteness factor and the comic relief that he exhibited was not anything like, it was not nearly, it was 10 times the level that he was in the first movie, and perhaps it was slightly overplayed. Definitely he has a place there, and he is a humorous character with his one line and his stoicism. So, but it just seemed that they went to the well a little too much with this episode with him. So that's with this movie. So I enjoyed him. I can't say I was sick of him, but when people say that, I can sort of grudgingly say I see where they're coming from, even if I don't 100% agree.
You know where that might come from is that I felt like if you took the opening sequence out of the equation, I feel like his inclusion in the rest of the movie was perfectly fine, but they really beat you over the head with it at the beginning.
Like, yes. Although at the same time, that's really my impetus to go see it a second time. So I can actually pay attention, more attention to the battle in the back.
Yeah.
I was kept trying every once in a while. I'd be like, snap out of this Groot coma I'm in and try and watch what's going on before, because it was really some cool stuff going on in the back when I snapped out of the, oh, he's so cute dancing. It was really good special effects and scenes in the background. I just wasn't paying attention enough to appreciate them. So, yeah, second movie, second viewing, hopefully the next week or so, I will focus on the background there.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the it's a common sentiment, what you're saying, in terms of it's not quite as good as the first one. And the reason that I've heard from a lot of people is exactly what you said, that the first one felt fresh. It was a familiar story, but the characters were fresh. The kind of cosmic look at things was a little more fresh, and it allowed it kind of lent the entire thing a very overall fresh aspect to it. I'm trying to find the right words, but I'm not really going beyond just the fact that it felt fresh, right? It felt new. It felt different. This was more of that, and while it was still a very good and certainly very enjoyable example of more of that, I think there was a little bit lost in the fact that you didn't have that kind of introductory aspect to really get you going. These were familiar characters now, because we've all seen them first movie enough times to really know them at this point. They did add some new characters. They added some new wrinkles. I really think that anybody who goes to see that should see the first movie again first, in order to be, because there are a lot of little plot points and references and callbacks that are actually really cool, that they went to that extent. But this really does feel like it, you know, Marvel maybe held back James Gunn a little bit with the first movie, and I feel like they almost told him, like, you know what, dude, you can do more of the kind of weirdness that you really want to put into this movie, because man, it felt like he was swinging for the fences here with just quirkiness and the sense of humor of it all. It really, there were some moments in there that I never in a million years would have guessed that they'd go there. Pac-Man? I'll just...
Waka waka, yeah.
I heard that out there. I was like, whoa, you got to be kidding me. It works.
But that, you know, that's another thing that happened in this movie that was a shift for me. And I guess I honestly, you probably have to be of a certain age or at least to have a full understanding. You know, the first movie focused so much on the 70s. Now, all of a sudden, we're focusing on the 80s. You know, you have Pac-Man, you have David Hasselhoff. You mentioned
David Hasselhoff. Oh,
I know. He's big in German. Anyway, yes. But, you know, so it shifted to the 80s at some point. And I'm like, huh? I think you could have really mined the 70s a lot more. I was really hoping for the Smokey and the Bandit references, which never, which they decided to jump to the 80s instead. So that was a little bit of a surprise. And, you know, while my kids didn't bat an eye because honestly the 70s and 80s merge for them.
Of course, yeah, for better.
However, for somebody that knows the difference, I'm like, wait a minute, I thought he was pulled in the 70s, and that's why we got the music and the soundtrack and da 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 da. Now all of a sudden, wait a minute, he was taken in the 80s. I don't like this retconning that they're doing.
I don't know that they did a retcon, did they? Because I think that it was more that the music might have come from the 70s, but that's because it was her awesome mix number one. And the impression that I got was that it moved forward because it was the second collection. So if you just kind of think about it, it's like more obvious or likely that it would have moved forward. It was a lot more obscure, I'll give you that. There were some songs in there I'm like, really? This is what you pick?
Okay. I thought that as well. I was like, oh, wow, this one's not going to go to the top of the charts the way the last one did.
Yeah.
It really seemed like they were reaching for songs this time. And gosh, you wouldn't think they'd have to.
True, true. He was abducted from Earth in 88 in the original movie.
Really? Okay.
Yep. So, yeah.
He should have had to look it up. He should have had a Walkman with Megabass by then. Hmm? He should have had a Walkman with Megabass by then. You know, that's really an old Walkman for him to have in 88. Anyway.
But, yeah, I mean, it's just the fact that, to me, a lot of effort was made to ensure that elements from the first movie were carried through and even plot points were carried through pretty well, because when they first said that, okay, yeah, this is going to address his parentage, I thought that it was going to end up being an almost incidental thing, but the sheer amount of background that went into it and how it drove the story and actually then even got into more and more of the details of what happened with his mother and so forth, that was something that I appreciated that a lot. Given the fact that the theme of the film was family to such a great degree. So it worked on a number of levels at that point, because you had, you know, obviously the Guardians themselves as a family. You then had Peter and his parentage and the whole idea of you've now met his actual father. And, you know, how does that work with Yondu and so forth? Yondu, is that his name?
Yondu.
I don't know why I was conflating it with Londo, but okay. it's the hair.
Well, you know, yeah, but one's horizontal and one's vertical.
Exactly.
Yeah, there you go.
It's diametrically opposed. But anyway, yeah. You had all of that. You had the whole thing going on with Gamora and Nebula. You had, Drax talking about his family. You had just, you know, everybody and their brother was really getting into various aspects of familial relationships and so on, and yet it still always came back to the Guardians themselves as a family. Even the Ravagers, to a certain extent, you got a much more complete sense of who they are.
As a side note, it didn't get broadcast a lot, but you know the Ravagers were actually the original Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
That was such a nice touch. And well, I was, you know, it's nice when they throw in geek moments like that. And at first, when he was first talking to, Starhawk, but they gave him a different, they used his real name, I think.
Yeah.
But anyway, when he's talking to Starhawk and I see Martin X right next to him, I was like, wait a minute. I kept looking and looking and didn't see anybody else really. I was like, but then when they had that scene towards the end, I was like, oh yeah.
It all added up very nicely.
Yeah, so
that was fun.
That was a great touch. I enjoyed Nebula much more, though, in this movie than I did in the first one. I thought Karen really brought her acting chops up significantly with this character, and not just the tender moments, but even when she was, you know, being her obnoxious self, I felt the performance rang much truer than it did in the first movie. It was a thrill to watch her act in this one. I thought she did a really great job. It really sold the role for me, so I was extremely happy with that.
Yeah, exactly. The Nebula really got a lot more fleshed out here, I thought. Yes. She just wasn't a plot device on legs. She actually had her own motivations going on, which was a lot of fun. And again, it was one of those things where it lent a lot of... I actually feel like in this movie, she got more time and exploration than even Gamora did.
Yes,
I think have, you know, annoyed people who are fans of that character. But as they've been extremely open about, they very intentionally did that with Nebula. And the intention is, of course, for the third movie to be more, you know, Gamora's side of thing again, which makes a lot of sense. You've got a huge ensemble. Certain characters are going to get emphasized over others. It's probably got to be just slightly galling to be kind of second fiddle to a CGI tree, but it is the way that it goes. It's not like, you know, there is a hierarchy of the characters that are more or less popular, and you know, I think that Gamora got a lot of time in the first film, so I can imagine that she was like, okay, wait, am I really being de-emphasized this much? Well, yeah, but for reasons. I think it made a lot of sense for things to play out the way that they did. Her character is in a pretty stable place right now, and it was really in relationship to Peter and his kind of all-over-the-map character, you know, character beats this in this film, because he was so being pulled in so many directions. Really felt like... as you said, it actually, for Nebula at least, and for a couple others, it felt like it led really well into what they're going to be, you know, what their motivations are going to be for Infinity War. But I guess we'll find out in a year, but it seemed to match up pretty well for me. You were going to say something?
Let's see if I lost my train of thought or not. I lost it, sorry. I'll come back.
Yeah, so I think that it's just one of those films where they did kind of want to broaden things out a bit. I liked the way that they did Ego. It was a nice callback to the old Marvel stuff.
I loved Kurt Russell's performance, how he was... I felt that it was really... it was well done in the sense that, you know, it's not this mustache-twirling type of villain. You know, it's a villain in... I don't want to say the true sense of the term isn't the right way to put it. But it's, you know, the best villains for me are the ones who think that they're doing good. Mm-hmm. You know, that they're not intentionally trying to screw everybody over. Hey, it's going to be better when I'm running the place. You know, there won't be, you know, there won't be hunger. There won't be want. You know, it's everything's going to be improved if you can just let me, you know, take over. the villains with the purest of intentions, I enjoy the most. And, that's what Ego was for me in this movie. He really was just, oh, everything's going to be better once I'm, you know, controlling everything everywhere. Come on, give me a hand. Although his intentional breeding programs that seem to fail consistently is... he wasn't good by any sense of the imagination, but he sure came across nice.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, it's good and bad from a certain point of view, right? I mean, from his point of view, he's not human, right? So... for him, millions of years, billions of beings in the galaxy, in the universe, what have you, you know, for him, it's just, okay, it's a percentage, it's a process, I don't know that he even would think about it in those terms, because it could have been simply, end justifies the means, from his point of view. But, as you said, it's not like they are trying to do something like, you know, Thanos, who is clearly just out to destroy stuff and so on.
Yes.
What did you think of Mantis?
Not much, really. I don't feel we really got any... We didn't get any real development for her. We got, 2 to 3 sentences. Hmm. And she didn't seem key to the action, except for the one time where she put him to sleep, I think. And we had no sense of, at least from the, you know, the comic book history of what her destiny is supposed to be or anything like that. And so I felt they missed out on our opportunity to make her a larger character. But at the same time, we got, as you said, we got so much for Nebula. We got so much for Yondu. We even got a lot for Ego, that we did get a lot of character development. It just, I don't think they had enough time to get into everyone, was what the issue was. They had great beats, but how, you know, there's only so much time in a movie, so at some point you got to just cut your losses. And I have a sense, I'll bet you there's a draft somewhere where it's another half hour long, and we probably got all this exposition we're hoping for.
Yeah, and it probably played really just too long, and they just said, you know what, it just makes sense to let her be where she is. And not only that, but she's kind of in the Nebula role in the sense of being a plot device more in this film than perhaps in the future. So I think that it was seeding for the future more than anything, because of course there was that tag at the end with the Sovereign's little experiment in breeding themselves.
Yes, and that's interesting because we've seen it once before already. At one point, we saw it on the Collector ship, if I recall, or at least something very, now I guess maybe it's just similar to it. But we did see Adam Warlock's cocoon. I can't recall which movie it was, but during one of the extra credit scenes, we did see it already. So I was a little surprised that they reintroduced it to us. But nevertheless, there it is. So.
Right. I want to say that it probably would have or should have been the last Guardians movie, but was it when they were in the Collectors, on the Collectors planet? But maybe not.
Well, if it, John, thanks to Hollywood, if it does well, we will get more.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But I was suspecting that was laying the foundation for either future Avengers stuff or for the third Guardians movie, which would make sense for Mantis to then be a lot more prominent in a story with Adam Warlock. But, I mean, he's so tied to the Infinity Stones in the comic book universe that it would be really weird for him not to be involved more on the overarching Phase 3 stuff, you know? But,
well, true, but they do have to introduce him, so you never know. Yeah,
you never do know. Of course, there was the ever present Stan Lee cameo with the Watchers, which,
well, that's been an ongoing theory for a while, so I guess now at this point you have to say there is actually more credence to it, that that the reason he appears in all these Marvel movies is not because they're paying homage to the originator of many of these, but rather the fact that he is a, was it a Watcher assistant? I forget the exact phrase they used, but definitely tied to the Watchers in some way. So that makes perfect sense, and in some ways frees him to continue to show up all over the place.
That's right.
So that's
still kicking.
So I enjoyed that. And then the one that personally hit extremely close to home was Teenage Groot. I am living that right now. And and it just, I could only chuckle in a way that only someone who is deep up to their chin in exactly the same thing can appreciate. Mm. But oh yeah, they were pegging every line he said was something I have said in the last month. So I found that quite amusing and chuckling, and so that was a lot of fun.
Well, it was just as much for that reason, but also for someone like Quill, who is such a man-child and has never really grown up, to be spouting those lines really made it a lot more funny to me, because it's like, wow, really? You of all people sitting there complaining, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, that just added something to it, I think. Any other thoughts on Guardians 2?
No, I think we've gone through just about everything. I wasn't happy with the villain. And I guess I don't mean Ego. I thought Ego was knocked it out of the park. It was the what were they calling themselves? Because they're so memorable to me.
The Sovereign.
The Sovereign. I just didn't get it. I found the that everything was remote control to be a cute touch, but short of that, I just found them rather lame. And maybe that was the point. Maybe they're supposed to be unimaginative and things like that. But I just didn't get much out of them as a villain to be feared or really worried about in any shape, fashion, or form. They fell very flat for me.
Yeah, I think they were more of a what's the word for it? I guess they themselves were also more of a device than anything else. They kind of kept the story kind of moving, but they didn't seem to have a lot to them. Although I did really enjoy the fact that their little remote systems had video game sounds as their on their interface, but
yes,
that again was kind of leading into a lot of those little quirks that this movie had, that even more so than the first one, they really amped up those a lot, and you got the movie really had a lot of personality, which I enjoyed. Otherwise, I'll just once again reiterate that for me, too, I also agree with what you said earlier, that this was maybe not on the same level as the first movie because of many reasons, but I still feel like this is a solid entry for the MCU. I don't think that this is a step down like we could say for, you know, Iron Man to Iron Man 2, where, you know, they clearly bit off more than they could chew. I feel like they did a lot in this movie, but it was also pretty well put together.
Oh, yeah, no, it was not a bad movie. I just didn't feel that it reached the level that the first did.
Exactly. All right, well, I think what we'll do is go ahead and wrap this show up here, and when we come back next time, we'll be talking a little bit about the advanced buzz and news going into the network upfronts for this year. So, until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.